Hello and welcome to this Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live, or should I say this fantastic Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live, even though Darren remains on paternity leave, home with Rena and their third baby, we're still killing it here. I feel like aren't we doing great there, Nick? I feel like we are. Second hour, we got a game show for you with the top secret celebrity guest for the game show. And this hour, I should mention Chuck, the guy who runs the internet here. Does he run the whole internet, or I don't know how it works? I don't know how computers work, but Chuck is very important here. They just welcomed their third baby as well. So we're a lot of third babies coming around here. So if the internet or anything goes out, you just be happy for Chuck and Ashley and the new baby. This hour, we talk a bit about, well, identity politics. And maybe I think a lot of people have a sense these days of being a little bit bullied as far as what's acceptable to say and what's not acceptable to say. And instead of maybe I don't want to be too provocative, but maybe instead of following Dr. King's idea of the content of our character rather than the color of our skin or whatever else might be our identifying factor, we've gone the other way. We've decided, no, we're more interested in a different kind of diversity than diversity of persons all with high character. So we have to help us unpack that and discuss that and most importantly, find the Catholic perspective on all of that. As you know, one of my favorite guests here on Catholic Answers, Gloria Purvis. Hi, Gloria.
Hey, Si. You're my favorite, too.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. I know we're keeping you up really, really late on a Friday.
Right.
It's after your bedtime. But
you know it is. But for you guys, I would certainly do it.
If you don't know Gloria Purvis, she graduated from Cornell University with a bachelor's degree in science in human development. But yeah. The important thing is that she got into Cornell because her Aunt Becky paid for
right. Look, if we had that kind of cash, I'd have been like, do I need to go to Cornell?
I know. Why go to Cornell?
Why bother with that?
So that was a mean joke. I apologize
was
for that.
Was it? It was funny.
Gloria served as chairperson of the Culture of Life Committee and coordinator for Young Adult Association at St. Augustine Catholic Church in Washington, D.C., and on the Archdiocese and Pastoral Council for the Archdiocese of Washington. She's a board member of the Northwest Pregnancy Center and Maternity Home in Washington, D.C., an advisory board member of the Maryland Catholic Conference's Respect Life Department. She serves on the National Black Catholic Congress Leadership Commission on Social Justice. She's the chairperson of Black Catholics United for Life, which seeks to increase the size and strength of active Black Catholics participating in the pro-life movement. And all that is great, but you probably know her from Morning Glory, which airs each morning on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, where she is the number one. Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers is number two. And then whatever priest is visiting is number three. Is that how that works?
No. We are a team having a great conversation every morning. It's myself, Deacon Harold, and Monsignor Charles Pope is our godly council Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday and Thursday, we have a different priest. Tuesday is Father Bjorn Lundberg. And Thursday is Father Vincent DeRosa. And probably a lot of people are familiar with Monsignor Pope from his blogging for the Register, the National Catholic Register as well.
So, I got to tell you, we're probably going to be wearing you all out for the morning show because Monday, Monsignor Pope is our guest. So,
God bless him for getting up early and then down later.
Yeah.
Late. I'm sorry.
I know. But I have to say, if you haven't tuned into Morning Glory, you should tune into Morning Glory. These are fully Catholic people alive in their faith. And the exciting thing is they have their own opinions.
We do
think that's so good for Catholic media that you have a fun show where you all talk things out and
we don't always agree either.
But you're always respectful of Deacon Burke-Sivers as clergy, and you always give way to him, whatever he says.
Oh, right. No, that's not me. Right. Wrong show. No, we totally, if we don't agree, we straight up just don't agree.
I think that's great, Gloria.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's because it's all intelligent, good Catholic people, and the idea that we all have to agree on everything. I guess that may be one of the things, and that we can talk about today. When we talk about identity politics, our topic, by the way, is identity politics and the Catholic faith. If you'd like to call, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. But the idea that we can disagree civilly is something that's disappearing.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I have to say, in terms of identity politics, I always get confused when I hear people use it, because I came to understand it out of the term, the way this black feminist group defined it. And so for those people who aren't familiar, I'm going to take a step back. There was something called the Combahee River Collective Statement. Now, you might be saying, the Combahee River, why does that sound familiar? Well, Harriet Tubman, during the Civil War, helped lead a raid with the Union soldiers at the Combahee Ferry and help rescue more than 700 slaves. So about 100 years after that, let's see, 1973, this black feminist group took the name Combahee River Collective in her honor, paying honor to Tubman's work as a powerful advocate for women's suffrage. Okay, so that's the background. So this Combahee River Collective statement came from women who are black feminists and lesbians. I'm hoping people aren't falling apart here as I say this. But when they talked about identity politics, they made it clear that identity politics, and they're the ones that coined the term, was about them recognizing that they were the only ones who could really work on their specific oppression and seriously end, work for an end to that oppression. And that they focus, they said focusing upon their own oppression is embodied in this concept of identity politics, and that their politics evolved from a healthy love for ourselves, our sisters, and our community, which allows us to continue our struggle and work. And they wanted to be, they said, we reject pedestals, queenhood, and walking 10 paces behind. We want to be recognized as human. Levelly human is enough. That's what they wanted. And they also made an interesting statement, which is so different from, as you know, feminism today, at least as people see it, is that they were very, very specific that they will not, they felt solidarity with men. And they didn't advocate fractionalization that they saw, quote unquote, white feminists wanting this fractionalization from men. They said, look, we have a struggle with black men. And so we cannot separate ourselves from them. We struggle together with black men against racism, while we also struggle with black men about sexism. And they thought that, you know, it was foolish to say we have to kick, that we cannot work with men. So they thought that was absolutely silly. Now, granted, a lot of their conclusions about how they would work to end their oppression are not things that I agree with. But the term identity politics was about, hey, we need to focus on our oppression, and we are the only ones that can really work on it, because it affects us intimately, and that this working on this is a movement out of love, that we just want to be recognized as human, levelly human. And so that's why when people talk badly about identity politics, I'm like, well, wait a minute, the civil rights movement was an identity politics movement, in that it was black people working for an end to the unjust discrimination they were seeing in civil rights law and in their lived experience in the South and other parts of the country. And so whenever people talk about identity politics, this is what I'm thinking about. I'm totally in understanding identity politics is coming from a place of, we love ourselves to work to end our own oppression and be committed to that, because we want to be recognized as fully human.
So I remember 1973 as a time when there was this phrase that they kind of gained currency at the time, and it was black is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
So, so is that what you mean? It means identifying your own kind of not being getting your identity from other people, but being willing to say, hey, black is beautiful. That means.
Yeah.
Is that.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. Well, I would say that they were like, look, we're human. We're fully human, and we want to be treated as such. This oppression is unjust because we're fully human, and we love ourselves enough to struggle in working to ending our oppression. And yeah, that has to stem from saying, as a black woman, you know, I love myself. There's a love here. There's something special about me. We know as Catholics that what's special is that you're made in the image and likeness of God, right?
So, okay, so amen to that. But so that's where it all started. What do you think of identity politics now? What does it become?
Well, I think, you know, it seems like it's just this political war to separate everybody.
Yeah.
And that people hear the term. I think the way that identity politics is used is completely contrary to what these black feminists meant in the Combahee River Collective statement. It doesn't seem to be, as people are trying to use it now, some people misusing it, it doesn't seem to spring from a place of, look, we have to love ourselves and work to end our oppression. Sometimes it seems like people are using it to clobber others. And that's, again, not what it was intended to be. It was intended to recognize, you know, I have to be committed to loving myself and being involved in any work to, you know, end unjust discrimination against myself or people like me, you know, something that I might share with other black women, or in some cases, you know, that I might share with other Catholics. When we look at all this, religious liberty infractions, those are things that we as an identity politics as Catholics, because we are Catholics and we love our faith, we love, you know, the ethos that we have as Catholics, that we would band together and fight things like these anti-discrimination statutes that really tend to take away our religious liberty and try to paint us as bigots because we hold fast to traditional teachings, of the church. So, I mean, maybe listeners could get it from that perspective, you know, that, you know, when we work together to try to combat anything that diminishes or unjustly erases our religious liberty, that's an identity politics movement too, right? Because we do love our faith, we love our identity, if you will, as Catholics, and think that anything that inhibits our ability to practice and live our faith is unjust, and we band together to work against it. But it's not from a movement of hate of those out there, but a movement for a movement out of love of our faith and wanting to protect that which is valuable to us. To me, that's what identity politics, as explained by these black feminists, what they meant by it. And that was the origin of the term. I really am like, how did it get all mixed up and messed up? You know, well, that's not what it meant.
It puts me in mind a little bit of George Orwell's idea that everybody's equal, but some are more equal than others. And that it seems like that the identity politics thing became every identity is good and beautiful, but yours is not as beautiful. If you know, like, say, the Christian identity. Christian
right.
identity, that's not as good as, you know, some kind of post-Christian identity.
Right.
So it seems like kind of a sleight of hand happens there. Where, your identity is beautiful. You know, like there was when I was a kid here in Southern California, the Chicano movement. This is just taking and saying, hey, and some people are offended by the word Chicano now, but but at the time it was this movement of, hey, we're here too, and this is great, you know? Okay, so you start with that. Mm-hmm. But somehow it gets to where, actually, we don't value all identities. Some identities are problematic.
Right. Well, here's what I would say.
Yeah.
You know, let's be real. I don't think identities that are, quote unquote, tied into just being based on acts, like sexual acts, to me, that's not an identity. That's an action. Your identity doesn't come from, you know, sexual acts. So when people say, oh, I have, you know, a heterosexual identity, or I'm like, what are you talking about? Those are just actions. I think your identity is, as Catholics, we know our identity is being made in the image and likeness of God, right?
Yeah.
But other people will say their identity, I have a black identity, meaning they experience the world in a particular way because of their being, not because of their doing anything. And that's why I think I get really annoyed when I see transgender rights activists and people who want to affirm same-sex activity, trying to liken it to the black experience or the black civil rights movement. I was like, that's absolutely flawed and not true. I said, because ours is a movement about our being persons, not about the private sexual acts that we engage in. It was not anything at all like that.
And you can't criticize someone for being black, like, oh, you're blackness.
Right.
But you can criticize people's behaviors. And then now we're in trouble if we start saying, no, you can't. It's all the same. You know, what I'm doing over here is the same as you, Gloria, being black.
You know, it's funny that you say that. You know, I get a lot of private direct messages on Twitter and Facebook where people really get angry when I make the distinction between being black and engaging in homosexual activity, or that this black civil rights movement was completely different from this movement to redefine marriage. Because I'm like... the black civil rights movement was just about black people being able to participate in society and not have laws against them or have things like sundown towns. And I said, if to get the example, if you go back to the mid-1800s, if you look at how the law affected a black person and how the law affected someone that engaged in homosexual acts were two different things. You see a black person on site, you know they're black. You don't know that someone is quote unquote has this attraction unless you catch them in activity or they outwardly tell you, right?
Yeah.
So it's a different experience.
No, I feel like it's a way of using the black experience in America to say, to cover yourself in that kind of in the glory of the civil rights movement or whatnot, instead of saying, wait a second, someone's actually making an intellectual critique about marriage.
Right.
And I need to engage in that.
Right.
No, I'm like the new Martin Luther King over here.
Right. Well, you know, it actually really infuriates me. It abuses our history. You know, we had a particular experience in the United States, and it abuses our history. It abuses the real struggle, the real sacrifice, the real difficulties that black people experience in this country so that people can put forward these arguments for sexual egalitarianism, that there's an equalness in their private sexual acts that I'm like, that completely it completely demeans what our experience actually has been. And so that always, I find that very, very aggravating. And it also just isn't true. It's just simply not true. They're not apples to apples comparisons.
Gloria Purvis is our guest. I have overstayed my welcome. I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more discussion of identity politics and the Catholic faith right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I had called in last spring about talking to my parents and I was going to convert to the church and how to talk to them. They were not happy at all, but I was confirmed to the church at the Easter Vigil service, and we really don't talk about the topic, but our relationship is still intact, so that's a good thing. Just wanted to say thank you, and I still listen every day because I always learn something new.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Gloria Purvis, our guest this hour. Next hour is the game show. We're talking a bit about identity politics and the Catholic faith. And one of the things about being Catholic, and one of the things I like about what you do on your show and in just your way of talking about things, is that the world keeps posing us these opposites and saying, pick, you know, you got to be conservative or liberal. You got to be Republican or Democrat. You got to be, you know, this or that. It's one or the other. And that is not the way of the Catholic faith.
No. You know, I think I always tell people, and they're like, well, you know, this and the other. I said, you know, I owe no allegiance to the Republican Party, no allegiance to the Democratic Party. I only owe allegiance to Jesus Christ, and I'm going to follow him wherever that takes me. And so rather than having a lens, my lens is my faith, and that's how I look at issues and try to figure out, well, what would be a just response, what would be the right response, rather than, oh, if I say that, that's going to alienate the Democrats, or I say that, I'm going to alienate the Republicans. I'm only concerned about alienating and offending Jesus, honestly. And when you can do that, and when you look at issues in that way, you find that all the screaming and the raging and it's just silliness, and it's more fog and smoke than there is reason. you know, that we have to line up on our sides and stay with those sides. And I'm like, that's, that makes an idol out of your politics, right?
Yeah, we got to stop doing that, right? It is an idol. And like we, another term we might refer to is the idea of multiculturalism, which is so dismissed now. And in many ways, again, it's like the term identity politics. It's so abused that maybe it should be dismissed now. But as a Catholic, you should remember the first multicultural, multi-ethnic, multinational national society in the world was the Catholic Church.
Like, amen.
Well, we were just talking at the break, like who is a really good at identity politics? If you wanted to think of it in a healthy way, it's Mary.
Ah, the Blessed Mother. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Because she, well, like you see her in Poland. And how she appears there, she looks like a Polish girl. You see her in Mexico. She looks like a, well, in this case, an Aztec girl.
Yeah.
Or young woman or whatever. You see her, you know, she's able to say, to love the identity of every culture that she appears in.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that. I went to, at the, right here in Washington, D.C., we have the John Paul II Shrine. And in its early years of opening, they had this exhibit about Mary. And they had all these different depictions that artists around the world had of Mary, of where she appeared. And I'll never forget, this one kind of really, it was peculiar to me that they had this sculpture of Mary, that she had appeared to this man in this village. I can't remember what country, a small village in Africa. And so the man was an artist and he sculpted it. And he was like, she appeared to me. And she's looks like a woman from his tribe, which means she has African features and she's topless and she's got this little thing around her waist. And they put in the exhibit that the person interviewing him basically laughed at him and was like, that Blessed Mother would never appear like that. She doesn't look like that. And I thought, you know, that's a bit of bias to assume that she can't appear like the people in this particular tribe to this particular man so that he would understand who she is as a woman and a mother. And I'm like, why would she go to a place that speaks English and then she only speaks, you know, Greek? You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
She's going to go and speak and appear in a way in which the people of that culture can understand and relate to her because she's their mother too, you know?
Right. And that's what why I was delighted to have you on, because I want to have more of the conversation, and I hope people will join us in that conversation. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. Gloria Purvis, of course, is our guest. But we have to be committed to making a Catholic response to the things that the modern world throws up to us, not making a just kind of you know, knee-jerk response, but a fully Catholic response to the. So we've talked a little bit about identity politics.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked a little bit about multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And I would throw this at you, Gloria, and get your take on it. It does strike me that the way that identity politics is being done now, where you see like a thing is only good, whatever the thing is, it doesn't matter if it's a school, if it's a committee, if you have one of everybody. You know, we got one of these, and the everybody includes categories that are sometimes morally problematic.
Oh yeah, you know? For sure. Oh, for sure.
Like it's not a real religious meeting if you don't have a Satanist there.
Well, right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, it is.
Right. We can't come and talk about faith when I mean, the whole purpose of Satanism is not to turn people toward God, but to away from a belief in God, right?
So I saw something yesterday that I have not seen before and disturbed the heck out of me. A great big SUV type car that looks like it could just drive over everybody else's car. And on the back are the words white nationalist militia.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm thinking that person just feels like they can go out in the world with that. And I think it's because we have this idea that, hey, if you're going to shove all this identity stuff down my throat, and it's not a completely dumb idea. You can see how people could get – but not that white nationalism is not a dumb idea. That's a bad idea.
Right.
You know, the idea like, fine then. If that's the way it's going to be, I'll just put this badge on my car. I don't know how that guy survives his day, but but
well, you know, so this is the difference, right? The identity politics, I hope, as listeners heard earlier, as identify was not a movement of exclusion or of hatred, but one built on We've got to love ourselves enough to work to end our oppression, but that does not mean we therefore wouldn't, that, you know, we got to be exclusionary of other people. Like they rejected quote unquote white feminists saying we have to reject men. She's, they were like, no, we work with men. No way. So the difference I would think when you hear that, cause some people might say, well, he's working from a place of love. And I was like, no, sounds like he's working more from a place of fear and wanting to exclude others. Right.
Yeah, right.
That there's only a country for white people, or, you know, we have to have this fatherland or whatever you want to say. Whereas the black feminists were like, we just want to be treated as human.
Yeah, right.
We just want to be treated as human, right? But that also brings me to think about intersectionality, right?
Oh,
again,
that's that other
term,
word.
Another term that's right. Completely, again, a black woman who was a professor of law, Kimberly Crenshaw, coined the term to try to help people understand. She was looking at legal cases, and there was a case, several of them. One was DeGraffenried versus General Motors, which we'll probably talk about when we get back from the break, because I hear the music.
Yeah, and we'll get to calls, too. I'm not putting you off, callers. We will get to you. 888-318-7884. We're talking about identity politics and Catholic faith. We're getting in some multiculturalism, some intersectionality, and we'll get your calls in as well right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tell you what, I don't even care about meat most days, but suddenly it's a Friday in Lent and I get a meat craving. What is that about? Like what?
Oh my gosh.
It's just because it's Friday in Lent.
I had that so bad this morning. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I want bacon. I was like, what are you doing, girl? It's Friday. You can't even.
I know.
And I was like,
Do they make fish bacon?
Right.
Sounds delicious if they did.
I had the same thing so bad. And I was like, you know, why is this? Any other day, I'm like not even thinking about meat. But boy, yeah. I woke up with a crazy desire to have like a meat sandwich. Just
that's where that just came over me, like at the break. I was like, man, I could really go for snow. I can't do that.
Right.
Gloria Purvis is our guest. She is abstaining from meat because she's a Catholic.
Right.
I hope you are too. That's what we do. We used to do that all the time. Some still do. I think it's a great thing if you're a Catholic and you just do it every day, because as our president here, Chris Check, always points out, it used to be something we did together as Catholics, and it kind of showed our identity as Catholics in the world. Like, you know, we got called things like mackerel snappers and all that kind of thing, but yeah, that's right. Good for you to have a, have something that identifies you. And that, and I, maybe we've lost a bit of our Catholic identity.
Yeah.
And not everything about identity, not everything about what sets you apart is a bad thing.
Right.
So we take as our topic this hour, identity politics. You were talking a little bit about Gloria Purvis is our guest. Gloria is the host, one of the hosts yeah. of Morning Glory each morning on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network,
right.
which means she's really an international star.
No,
this is not just local. This is, I mean, it's, they put the word global right there in it.
Oh, that makes me laugh. A star.
So,
oh, please.
Yeah. I know you can hardly go outside of your house.
Oh, yeah. They're all waiting out there for me.
I know.
They're
it's like an Amy Winehouse situation when you go out.
Right. Oh, gosh. Could you imagine? Oh, Amy Winehouse. God bless her.
I know,
Jesus,
the poor
the
dear.
Wheel.
Amen.
You
I know.
Know
it's
Jesus,
hard.
Take the wheel.
It's, I know. For a very fragile person to be that famous, I do
yeah.
feel for her.
Yeah, I think that's
and
what
pray for you her.
Know, pray for her. Yeah, she succumbed to alcohol. That's what how she lost her life.
Yeah.
You but, know, so poor Amy.
All right, well, can we maybe stay on the topic, though,
yeah,
Gloria?
Yeah, can we? I don't know.
I don't know. It's hard when you're...
It is.
Okay, so we were talking... in the context of all of this talk about identity politics, there is this word intersectionality. Which grates on me.
Yes.
And you're going to tell me why it shouldn't entirely grate on you.
Right. Well, here's why it shouldn't entirely grate on you. Well, it was a black female law professor used the term intersectionality to talk about, basically there were some legal cases where black women wanted to sue for discrimination and they wanted to sue from being black females. And she found that anti-discrimination law was basically didn't allow them to seek remedies as being black and female. They could pick race. Or they could pick gender, but they couldn't do both. And even in one of the decisions as to why they couldn't sue as black women, the judge says you would then have a super remedy that goes beyond what the people who wrote the anti-discrimination statutes meant. And so she was saying that legally that erased the discrimination that was particular to black women. Because basically she was saying they might share similarities and differences in discrimination experiences with black men and white women. So while it's not exactly the same, and the law didn't allow them to have a remedy specifically according to their experiences. And so she talks about this intersection of race and gender and not being able to get remedy in the law. And she talked about the term intersectionality, that black women have a particular experience of discrimination based not just on race, but also on gender, that isn't the same experience as black men or white women.
Ah, okay. So
that's what she meant by you're standing at this intersection. And then later on, it was an academic paper. The term intersectionality came out of an academic paper. And at the end, like as you get toward the end of the paper, she starts talking about if you can approach trying to solve problems from the perspective of this intersectionality, then all of us can, whoever has the most that keeps them out the door, if we focus on that all of us can enter the door together.
But now, okay, it sounds great. But
yes.
Now I feel like when I see it used on cable news or wherever, it seems like whoever has the most, I don't know, like victim cards
yeah.
is the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just stack up your victim cards and a black man has a certain something, but a gay black man, that's
yeah.
even something. Do you see
Which
what I'm
is
saying?
Silly in the sense that I guess when they try to, if it tries to come off like a competition, that's
yeah.
a problem.
Right.
Because the whole idea was about we all want justice for everybody. And so let's all seek justice for everybody. As you read through this, as you read through her, now she makes some conclusions that everybody might not necessarily agree with. But her whole point about intersectionality is that the way the law was written in terms of discrimination law erased the experience of black women. You either had to have the same kind of discrimination
right.
as a black man, or you had to have the same kind of discrimination as a white woman.
Yeah.
But being black and female, there was no place for you in the law to seek relief. And she also critiques feminism for that point. She also says feminism and the feminist theory fails because it doesn't take in the experience of black women. It's totally predicated on the experience of white women. And so she says, so there were some problems there. I mean, these are some interesting academic thoughts.
Right.
You know what I mean? And some
but when they get moving, when they move into pop culture, I think we're just so polarized that
yes.
it's very hard to, it's just like, okay, do you want this one or not want it? Okay, I'll go with intersexuality. No, I'll reject it. Yeah, go ahead, Gloria.
It was supposed to be a way in which we could figure out how to look at and resolve problems so that we can have justice for everybody. Yeah. But it has now become like, it's everything seems to have moved away from a spirit of, okay, we understand that you might have a particular experience and you want to be treated humanly and be loved. And it's not from a place of, you know, that you're raging against somebody and you don't ever want to hear from them. So too with identity, with intersectionality, it was just about recognizing certain things may affect people differently, but it doesn't mean that your voice can't be at the table. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yes, I do.
And so if you come from it, it's like that we want justice and understanding justice being people get what they are due because they are human. You know, the Catholic understanding of justice, it doesn't mean then to me, it necessarily means as a Catholic that some things we have to question, well, is that really justice? It is not justice to affirm someone in a behavior that we know is right. not going to lead them to happiness. And we would also say that's not an identity.
Well, right? I have to say all like liberation movements that we've had since the mid 1960s, you know, all the different various liberation movements that we've had, mm-hmm. they almost always become poisoned when they become connected to the sexual revolution. Mm-hmm. When they become like, I'm taking cover in this liberation movement to say you are not permitted to say that traditional, for example, Christian teaching on human sexuality, which is really just basic human teaching on sexuality in many mm-hmm. ways, that you can't use that. You can't use that anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's I think we were just talking earlier off air about, is that really even sex? You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Right.
That all these behaviors that people are, you know, you can't talk about these things because people feel that it's so ingrained in their quote unquote identity that they have to have these acts, right?
Right.
Even with the Kingdom of Brunei, right? There's all this hubbub, you know, about they're coming out and saying we are going to give apply the death penalty to people caught in homosexual acts and adultery. And I just happen to say, you know, well, yeah, not at all justifying killing people. I mean, let's be real. Nobody wants that.
No.
But I was trying to make a nuanced point that there's a difference between attraction and acting on something.
Right.
And if you notice, the law is based on acts, right? It's not saying we're just going to all out go and kill people who have a certain attraction in their heart, right? They're looking at acts and trying to say we want to stop it. We don't think it's moral. And I'm not at all making apologies for what they're doing. I don't want anybody to get killed. But what I am saying is it doesn't mean it's all out war on people who have same-sex attraction.
Right.
But then I got all these messages saying it's not a choice when you're same-sex attracted and engage in sexual activity. It's not a choice.
Well, yeah, it is. Every sexual act is a choice.
Well, that was my point. But somehow conflating having this attraction and action.
There are sexual assaults, so I shouldn't be so glib about that.
But you know, in honest dialogue and right. in good faith, we understand what you're talking about.
Okay.
Of course, you know, right? I do, yeah. And I hope people do. But you know, this idea that they act like somehow when people get married that they don't have attractions, that you don't find somebody else attractive. We don't act on that. We don't pursue those relationships, right? We have
right.
some self-mastery here. And so too, before you get married, you're not running around, you know, with everybody because you are trying to have self-mastery and self-control of your sexual faculty.
And not only that, there are things that husband and wives should not be doing together.
Amen,
and, you know,
brother.
And the church teaches that as well. And
yes.
so you're like, well, that's just something that I'm interested in. And that's my orientation is I'm...
Right. Well, the whole idea that people think that once you get married, it's the wild, wild west. I'm like, no, you can defile your marriage bed. And consent to doing certain things does not make whatever that thing is you're going to do in and of itself good.
Right.
You have to, right?
By the way, I just want people to know, we did a whole Catholic Answers Focus episode on this with Father Hugh Barber where he got extremely explicit, and it's awesome, about what does the church teach about sex within marriage, not sex outside of marriage, but sex within marriage. And it's great. And you know what? You'll find out some things you think the church says no to, the church does not say no to.
Right.
Some things that you think the church would be okie-doke with, maybe you need to rethink that. So I want to get to some calls over.
It
would be all right. Gloria, I almost called you Virginia because Joe from Virginia is next on the line.
Okay.
And I have a very small brain. And Joe's listening on 1160 AM. Joe, you are on with Gloria Purvis. Your question.
Thank you for having me. I tuned in, I don't know, 25 minutes ago on my way to stations. And I was listening, and I had to formulate my question before I called, so I'll start at the beginning. I think it's a part of human nature to identify with others based on biological similarities and physical appearances, like, you know, skin color, race, ethnicity, and things like that. I think it's just plain old part of human nature, and that's why on an abstract level, I'm not offended in the slightest by Mrs. Purvis being a member of a diocesan-level organization of Catholics that's organized among the common factor of being black. But in practice, such an organization of Catholics that's formed along the basis of, let's say for the sake of argument, being of European extraction, so for lack of a better word, white Catholics, would cause shock and outrage and disgust and scandal in the church in the United States. And I think that there are a lot of listeners like me who happen to be listening in and had that thought cross their mind, or at least I like to think that other people think like me. I'm a faithful Catholic. I'm not trying to stir the pot.
No, really.
I listen to all the shows on 1160 enough to know that there are people that call in just to cause trouble. I'm not one of those guys. I just want to get...
No, let's talk about it. I'm glad you brought it up. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, the idea of, people are automatically going to hear, if it's a group for white Catholics, that it's by nature going to be exclusionary, right? Because they're like, well, what does that mean, the white Catholic experience in the United States has not been one where you've been excluded by and large? In fact, it was considered the standard for Catholicism in the United States, whereas the black Catholic experience is one where we had not, and in fact, been included in the church. And in fact, if you look at the life of Augustus Tolton, the first self-acknowledged black priest in the United States, the extreme racism, you know, and exclusion and hostility that he experienced, not just from white Catholics, but from his brother priest. You know, white priests had told people, if you go to his mass, you know, it didn't count for Sunday. So there's an experience that black people in the church have had and still have. And so we, as a group, if we meet, it's not about, and also white people belong to these groups, by the way, let me just add, everybody's welcome. And it's about how do we evangelize? How do we speak to the experience of black Catholics in the United States, you know, go out and keep people in the church and speak to some of the harms and hurts that people still have from how they've been treated. I will tell you that, you know, unless there's a lot of fanfare saying, oh, this is Gloria Purvis from Morning Glory from EWTN, I'm not always welcome when I go to certain churches. I will just tell you, it's an odd experience. I don't let it bother me because I'm like, oh, you know, we're all here for Jesus, you know, and it's okay if people, you know, giving me the stink eye, so to speak, or, you know, someone elbowing me out of the way when I want to go to communion and things like that. And that's, and I know people would be like, what? Do people still have those experiences? I can speak for myself. I do. Another friend of mine who's well-known pro-life activist in the UK, you know, has similar experiences when she goes to mass, when she goes to church. And so I don't know what it is about the black experience, but it's something that's different. Now, if white people were to have a group, people would see that as necessary exclusionary because they're like, white people have never been excluded in the United States from Catholicism. So it's a different lived experience, I think, of why people group around what their issues might be.
Joe, will you hang on? Because I have to do the break, but it seems like a very fruitful conversation. Would you be willing to hang on for a minute, Joe?
Sure.
Okay, great. We'll be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have a very hard time sometimes, and I'm so frustrated. I mean, frustrated. Somebody says, "How'd you do all this, Mother?" I say, "I didn't." And they look at me, huh? The Lord did. God does everything. Without me, he said, you do nothing.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. The book, the man that was referenced was Father Augustus Tolton. There's a book about him called Father Augustus Tolton, the Slave Who Became the First African-American Priest. The writer of that book is Deacon Harold Burke Sivers,
yep,
who just happens to be the co-host of Morning Glory with Gloria. So I know what this is about. You're selling books. I don't know what kind of cut you're getting.
Yeah, but EWTNRC.com.
but the point is well taken, and a very interesting place to have a conversation. Joe from Virginia,
yeah,
making the point of, look, why is there why are there any kind of groups for black Catholics? Is that really appropriate in a Catholic church? So,
yeah.
Joe, I want to get your response to Gloria's response to that objection that you raised.
You still there?
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. No, my response, I was ignorant before she responded to her reasoning that it's actually based more in the experience of black Catholics,
mm-hmm,
and not so often and I'm not going to debate the merits of this, but almost every other, I guess you could say all non-Catholic, therefore secular groups based around lines of having their race in common are based on the experience in a much broader sense. And I think that gets, unfortunately, leveraged in an intellectually dishonest way. Whereas Mrs. Purvis's basis of it being in the experience of black Catholics specifically, mm-hmm, makes much more sense and is much less likely to be used to shift conversation in an intellectually dishonest way.
May I, Joe, thank you for that. I wonder if I could just ask you this question, and again, not to pick any fights with you or anything, but would you be willing to concede that the black experience in the United States is different than, by an order of magnitude, different and includes injustices that are greater than any other group? I guess another way to say that is the black experience in the United States is not like any other experience in America. Would you be willing to concede that?
No, I'll put a twist on it just because I love the ins and outs of arguing. I think everybody's experience, because nature predisposes us to look at each other, to classify ourselves among racial lines in the first place. So I would say anybody who can articulate a racial category can find a reason to distinguish it from every other one. So yes, the experience of blacks in America is different than everybody else. and it might be different on an order of magnitude, but I don't like when I feel like it's shifting in the direction that, because it was so different by such an order of magnitude, that everybody else has to concede certain points, or, you know, now I get to captain the ship.
Huh. So here's what I hear that, this is what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, I mean, no one else was brought here as chattel, right? Was seen as property to the same order and degree that we were, my ancestors were, right? And from that history, you know, it didn't end with slavery. I mean, you had peonage, you had sharecropping, you had, you know, disenfranchisement, not having the vote, redlining, all these kind of things, right? And so it's not about shutting down the conversation. It's recognizing that there were historical realities that have still an impact. To me, it would be like, we understand that there are effects, stains from sin, so to speak. And I feel like we're still dealing with the stains from certain sins that, you know, were committed in this country against Black people, right? So we're still dealing with the effects of racism. We still have an issue with racism. We still have these things that we need to deal with. But it doesn't mean that we can't have an honest dialogue. I think oftentimes, a lot of times, why things like the National Black Catholic existed, which was with not only Augustus Tolton, but Daniel Rudd, was because the hierarchy, the bishops of the church, did not want to evangelize the freed Blacks. And so Black laymen took it upon themselves, because they believed in the teachings of the church. They believed that Jesus Christ was truly present. And they believed, you know, at least by the doctrines of a church, that they would give the Black person a fair hearing, so to speak, like in belonging and participating in the sacraments and in the church. And so they understood that they had to go out and evangelize their own people, this identity politics, if you will, love themselves enough to go evangelize their own people, because the hierarchy refused. That's a particular experience of Black Catholics. Not, I'm not saying it takes away from other people's particular experience, that a Black experience that they organize around that. Like, I was in Jack and Jill. That's a social organization for Black children that mothers got together because they wanted their children to have a certain cultural pride and understanding and education and all that kind of stuff. And that was a Black social group specifically for Black children around the purpose of, you know, great development. Now, some people say it's a snooty group, because most people, they would say, were rich, middle and upper middle class in the group. But nonetheless, they coalesced around this identity of being Black people with children wanting the best for their kids.
Joe.
So it's only a historical trauma, which, and I'm not trying to undermine the facts of Black history in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But on an abstract level, it is a historical trauma that, in a sense, makes socially acceptable the ability to organize on the basis of race.
If I may, because a thought occurs to me, Joe, and perhaps this will be helpful to you. Like, here in San Diego, we're an extremely multicultural place. So we have a Mexican national parish. We have an Italian national parish. We have a Polish. We have a Korean national parish. And the church doesn't see those as negative things. Those are good things. And I would say Black Catholics in the United States, they don't know. I mean, in most cases, did I come from Nigeria? Did I come from? So I suppose you could think of it as a national parish in a way, that being that, or an organization, that here you have people who, as Gloria said, were brought as chattel, as people's property to the United States. If you can have a Mexican national parish, and if you can have a Vietnamese national parish and a Korean national parish, then why can't you have a Black Catholic organization? I guess that's where I'm coming from. Gloria, I don't want to take your time, though. I apologize.
No, that's fine. I mean, I think I was just driving by Our Lady of Vietnam in Maryland. It looks like a temple you might see in Vietnam, but it was a Catholic parish. But I think, you know, I don't know what the I think some people would say the white experience is the American experience. You know what I mean? And that white people have not, in law and culture, been excluded from the country. And in fact, their way and experience has been the pattern for what is defined as American, right? And so I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to be quick to say a lot of the when these groups form, it's as a matter of solidarity. And also trying to know safe places. It used to be that when black people traveled, you had a black book to know what businesses would let you stay there, or eat there, and where you could be safe. One last thing. Somebody on Twitter said they were surprised to say that our Blessed Mother appeared as someone from an African tribe and that she was topless. The context was an art exhibit at the John Paul II Shrine, and this artist said she appeared to him, and he sculpted her, and she looked like a woman from his tribe, which is topless because that's how the women in his tribe are.
Gloria, the time went so quickly. I feel terrible. I feel like we could have so much more conversation. I apologize to those people that we didn't get to on the line. You can hear Gloria every morning on Morning Glory on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Coming up next is the game show with a super secret guest. Gloria, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.